Hello. I don't know where to look. I'm gonna look over here. It's my comfort zone. It's my happy place, if you will. Looking straight at the lens. What is this bitch over here? The viewfinder, LED screen that shows this face. Yes, I wanna make sure I look nice. I care about presentation. Hi. I'ma just talk. Hello and welcome. My name is Calvin. Calvin McKinney. I don't know why I said that like my name was James Bond, but that is my name. Calvin, not James. Listen, I don't know what to do with this channel anymore.
Yeah.
I used to interview celebrities. Don't really do that too much no more. I used to do like focus pieces on my community, you know, the black queer people. And that didn't really go too well. I love my people still, you know, all right. The only thing that has been going kind of okay in terms of like creating stuff and actually getting engagement and just honestly having a good time creating stuff. The only thing that has really kind of like elicited that same joy has been TikTok, sadly. And they about to take the bitch away. It's bad. There's talks of banning TikTok. And TikTok is one of the few places where I talk to people and they talk to me back. It's wild. It's wild. So I don't know what to do about that. I think it's worth the contemplation. Hello, vocabulary. I think it's worth thinking about whether or not I want to start making content of just me talking to the camera on YouTube, because that's essentially what I do on TikTok. Talk to the camera, mainly about me and my teeny weeny cheeks. That's the video that's gotten the most engagement. In all of me putting stuff online, I've never gotten that kind of engagement. And it's not necessarily about like, oh, clicks and views. Even though that's nice. Hello. Praise God. It's more about being able to have people who get you, which was nice. It was nice. Like, people who were laughing with me. People who were laughing with me instead of at me. So many people laugh at me. Not so many people, but enough to hurt a bitch. It's something. I don't know. TikTok, when I post there, it makes me feel good. I get a rush. I feel good feelings. And for a bitch with depression, it's important for me to chase good feelings. Of course, not just outwardly, inward as well. So when I can turn on the camera and like create things that just feel good to me, I want to do that. And if TikTok is not around, I want to still be able to do it somewhere. So I think this is just me trying to set the precedent of something. When I went live on TikTok for the first time, I was making a gingerbread house and failing miserably. It was astonishing how bad I was at making a gingerbread house. Is that easy for anybody? I don't tell me, because I'm gonna feel even more embarrassed. But it's hard, right? Is that not, please somebody tell me gingerbread houses are hard so that I don't feel insane. It was so hard. Nothing wanted to stick together, yet everything got sticky. It was madness. But I digress. I say all that to say this. The title that I gave that TikTok live was Homo Alone. Yes, because it was Christmas time, and then, you know, Macaulay Culkin. So it was very that. But yeah, if I make content where I'm just talking down the barrel of a camera, and if I just transfer my chaotic TikTok energy over to here, that's what it's going to be. Homo Alone. Yes, because I'm gay, alone, and I'm always home. So it feels right. It feels right. But yeah, I think that's what I'll call it. Here's the thing. Not everything needs to have a name. I mean, people do. Uh-huh. And things. I guess everything does need a damn name. Yeah. How else do you know what to call it? I just defied my own logic. Anywho, first and foremost, what is always important to me is that I try to somehow, some way, inject positivity into whatever I create. So I'm gonna start with a word. And by a word, I mean a post on Twitter that I really liked and felt deep down within in my spirit. It's honestly quite beautiful. So the tweet goes, I apologize to myself for every time I've made someone feel more important than they actually were, which made them comfortable disrespecting me. Hello, I'm gonna say it again. I apologize to myself for every time I made someone feel more important than they actually were, which made them feel comfortable disrespecting me. If I could throw my phone like Patti LaBelle throws shoes, I would. But I'm afraid of breaking her, so I'm not going to do that. That's a word. That's beautiful. Because here's the thing. People are important. People are important. But I feel like when you make such an outward, statement like that of saying people are important, you have to include yourself in said group of people. So when you identify and acknowledge that people are important in this world, you also need to make sure that you are also treating yourself as if you are one of the important people as well. And I feel like someone like me, who has issues with self-confidence, who has issues with finding their voice, you know, a past of being bullied, having to question, you know, their not only their self-confidence, but their self-esteem. I say all that to say this. When you are someone who puts people first, that's great. But you have to be first. You have to be first. That's the way the world, unfortunately, works sometimes. And it's beautiful when you can find relationships where you can be mutually prioritizing one another. But it's important to put yourself first. It's important to put your own mask on before helping somebody with theirs. I was talking about this with a friend where I know I have in the past taken things hella personally when I reached out to people. And I feel like when I need them, I don't get that same level of effort. And here's the thing, maybe they don't have that same level of effort. Maybe they're conserving their energy because they need to invest it within themselves. And that's admirable. That's them setting a boundary. And we can't get mad at people for putting themselves first just because we don't put ourselves first. Does that make sense? Like if me and my homegirl Molly, if we're always, you know, click tight like this and I'm dropping everything whenever she needs me and I'm frantic and losing my mind, partially because every time Molly or somebody else needs me, I'm dropping everything to be, you know, there with them or to help them and assist them. And then while I'm losing my mind and I'm frantic and I'm asking for help and they're saying like, hey, I have X, Y, and Z to do. I can't. That's not for me to get upset at, because I could have established those same boundaries when Molly was calling me and saying, hey, I'm here in other ways, but I do need to take care of my other responsibilities first. I do need to take care of myself first in order to be any good to you. You know, if you can't be good to yourself, how can you be good for anybody else in the world? It's almost impossible, at least for me. You know, some people are superhuman that way. I admire them, but it's important to pour into yourself first before you pour into others. Otherwise, you're going to be drawing from an empty well. And again, that's no good for anybody. So if you can't be good to yourself, how can you be good to others in the world? So you have to fill up your own cup first. That's just the bottom line of it. That's essential. And I feel like when you don't do that, the other reason why I say this is because when you don't do that, you will run into people who don't mind drawing from an empty well. They don't. They will wait until you get the little bit of water. They will beat on the ridges of that well. They will take advantage of you. There are some people who will, once they see how much you are a people pleaser, how much you're willing to do anything to be liked, I'm talking about myself here, they will take that and they will fully take advantage of it. They will make themselves bigger in your life because they know that they can. And they will take advantage by not only using you up of all of your time and your energy and your resources, but they will also feel entitled to it. And with entitlement comes disrespect. So again, this is a word. It's a word. So I just wanted to shine a light on that. I liked it. I liked that a lot. It spoke to me. You know, sometimes people pleasers, again, talking about myself, I'm working on it. We kind of attract people who need to feel more important than they actually are. Again, everyone's important in their own way, but some people need to feel the most important. And that's not what life is about. You know, my mother's favorite saying is, I am no better or no worse than anybody else out there in the world. So it's all about having the confidence of being good to yourself and knowing what you deserve and whose bullshit not to take, while also being humble enough to be okay with rejection or people putting boundaries in place for themselves, because you know that you would have to do the same for yourself, and that hopefully everyone's just doing the best that they can with the tools that they have. Nothing's personal, and someone else's behavior doesn't dictate your worth. She's sweating. If I pop up with another shirt, just know it's okay. It's all right. It's gonna be all right. Okay, so since this is Homo Alone, I think it's only right that we get into some gay news. I'm looking at my notepad right here. Okay. Here's the thing. Jerrod Carmichael. Jerrod Carmichael has been trending for like the last 2 weeks straight because of his, he's been trending for the last 2 weeks homosexually. Quite literally because of his new reality show where he's, you know, exploring his newfound life of being an out and proud gay man. Lovely. Amazing. So incredibly happy for him. A few things. Here's the thing. People were wilding about him expressing his feelings for Tyler, the Creator, and those feelings not being reciprocated, which I don't know if I would have shown that on TV. Listen, and I wrote a whole book about getting friend-zoned, rejected, and hurt in the name of trying to find love. So I felt the pain. I felt the cringiness of it, the secondhand embarrassment of it all. And it's just, I honestly didn't mind that part. It was actually quite relatable. I don't think I would have had the bravery to show that on TV. But, you know, different strokes, different folks. Listen, I think what people were really taken aback by was, like, him just showing and being so open with his, like, hookups, it seemed. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but he literally has someone's whole foot in his mouth. And I also think leading into the second week of when he was trending, it being someone who is white, he just had their entire foot just down his throat, just like the toes were hitting the tonsils. It was like a lot. Again, different shows, different folks. It won't be me. Won't be me. No, thank you. Feet don't do it for me. They just don't. They go on the floor. So that should not be up here. But I think the real issue was what was underlying. It's one of them words. I think the real issue, what was the underlying current with that particular visual, which we got more into in that second episode where he kind of jokingly, but maybe not so much jokingly, mentions him and his partner, who is white, being into race play. Can you say that on YouTube? Can you say that at all? Without feeling icky? I don't know. There were so many tweets. There was one tweet and it says, Jerrod Carmichael, I sentence you to 1 billion lashes. I don't think that will work because it seems like he's into that. But, you know, I mean, it's it made me giggle. Because I'm like, that's not how you do that. That's like threatening somebody with a good time. I don't know. There is a quote, a statement of some sort that I did read, and I'm not sure how valid this is, but it says from the desk of Jerrod Carmichael, people kind of took that and ran with it in regards to his joke. I don't see how you can joke about that. And I'm assuming that it's a joke because he is a comedian. And I feel like that would be the kinder thing to do, is to at least give him the benefit of the doubt, right? Even though I truly wholeheartedly believe that's not something that you really can play around with like that. Like it's a harmful dynamic that really feeds into that whole feed. I feel like it feeds into a certain type of rhetoric that is kind of shared alongside the same sentiments as like, oh, I have a black friend and like they're, you know, okay if I do this, they're okay if I do that. And it's like, I don't know. Certain black people who make themselves a little too comfortable with aspects of allowing people to essentially disrespect their race and their culture, I feel like it sets a dangerous precedent for other people who are also black. But here's what he said. He said, people kind of took that and ran with it. Do I probably need to see more black people? Yeah, of course. That's some shit rooted in like the black guys I would see were like DL. And it was just something else. So it's not on some exclusive race thing. But you know what got me about that. I saw some black gay men say I turned it off after that. And I'm like, you realize you're my mother now, right? you do realize that dismissing the one part of me that you disagree with is the shit that I'm talking about. It's a little hypocritical. God bless him. Truly. I don't agree with that. Because Gerard, I'm not your mother. I know from what I saw of that first episode, I know that they have their own relationship and its own challenges. But from what I understand, your mother is a cisgendered straight woman. So black queer men or black queer people who have an opinion on what you're doing, what you're showing, what you're promoting, essentially, I think they have more insight. We're not outside of the community judging what you're doing. We are a part of the community that you are also representing, and we're saying, hey, that can be harmful to the rest of us. I don't think it comes from a place of where we're your mother. We're not your mother. I feel like we're not your mother. We're not. We just happen to disagree. People disagree, and that happens. So, yikes. But I just don't feel like that's a fair thing to say. But I also don't know how valid this is. So, I should probably fact check this and see where it comes from. But yeah, I just wish him the best. Bless his heart. I don't know. You know what? I'm actually more concerned about the fact that Gerard Carmichael came out the closet and I haven't seen him with a t-shirt on since. That's what we really need to be talking about. I don't know what he was doing in the closet all that time. I don't know if he was just full on Angela Bassetting, waiting to exhale every crew neck that was in the closet while he was in it. And then when he came out, he said, I will not be bound by nary a crew neck ever again. But ever since he came out the closet, I don't think I've seen that man in a t-shirt. Not once. I could be wrong. Have I? I don't know. Is that what happened, though? Is that what happened, Gerard? Is it what happened? Because if so, if it was like, hey, like, I'm gay now, fuck shirts, I get it. Like, I do. I feel like every gay person has, like, a symbol of oppression that they kind of, like, nicks out of their lives once they come out the closet. For me, it was sleeves. So, like, I came out at 17, and I cut off the sleeves of every single one of my t-shirts. I still got some of the t-shirts too, and I still do it a little bit. I think it's because, here's the thing, I used to, it's a long story, it gets kind of dark, but a bitch used to self-harm, typically on her arms right here, and it was because I was dealing with not accepting myself and my sexuality. So I have scars here, I don't have scars here because I'm right-handed. Anytime I did anything, it was with this hand. So my scars are mainly over here. I might have one or two right here if I was like feeling very ambidextrous that day. And when I came out, I was like, I don't have to hate myself anymore. And so I cut off the sleeves of everything. I was cold. So I had to buy some more shit that had sleeves on it. But it was a time. It was an era. It was an era. So I wonder what's his deal with the shirts. But that's more so what I'm concerned about. Honestly, I might cut these off. I am sweating through this light gray t-shirt. Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to change. And then come right back. Okay, a bitch is back and in black. Where were we? Gerard Carmichael. But yes, I did fact check. And that quote comes from an interview with GQ from 2022. Okay, we're rhyming, practically Nicki Minaj here. Okay, and that was, of course, way before his reality show premiered on HBO Max, now Max. So that's not in relation to these current episodes that are streaming now, but it is in reference to his views on how black queer people are viewing his dynamic with being gay and being, I guess, attracted to white people, which, nothing wrong with that. But there's issues with the race play thing. So I'm moving on. Okay, Beyonce, because Beyonce is always gay news, has been doing amazing things. She sold, 407,000 records of Cowboy Carter. Amen. Isn't that great? Praise God. Beyonce really did something special with that album. Dare I say, she made me proud to be country. I always tell people I'm from Tennessee. You know, the home of country music and racism. And I say that with a shameful giggle, typically. But, you know, Beyonce and this album reminds me that I, too, have always been country. And I appreciate that. I appreciate her using the word country, because I feel like some people say country, some people say Southern. They use them interchangeably. Don't love that. I feel like Southern is a word that has like an implied hatred underneath it. You know, just a whisper of bigotry, just underlying. But a country can be for anybody. Hello. It's joyous. It's celebratory. So good for her. Good for her. And all the amazing women who were on the Blackbird track, who got the matching tattoos and were at the CMT Awards. It's just all a beautiful thing. Makes me happy. What else is going on? Okay. Everybody hates J-Lo. I don't know. That's so sorry to J-Lo. The lore of J-Lo being awful has just continued to expand thanks to TikTok. And I'm not sure how to feel about it. I think it's because I know that. I didn't think I was going to tell anybody this. I actually have a J-Lo story. It was actually when I first moved out here, and I was on the red carpet, and I had seen J-Lo, and she was going to walk the red carpet, but she didn't want to talk to anybody, right? She didn't want to do actually like the interviews, but she was going to do interviews for like one or two, and those would be, of course, the bigger outlets, like an ET or what was it? ET and Extra, right? So she would do those, but not any of the smaller publications like myself. But we were just told she was not doing any until we saw she was doing, oh, only select few. So I was like, okay, we got it. But when I did see me being new and just a little stupid, a little naive and hopeful and optimistic in so many ways, I saw her stop and I was like, let me at least try to get her attention. We Leos, okay? We gonna go for it. And I was like, you know, to my fellow Leo, J-Lo, can we talk? And then, you know, she looks at me. I give her my best Joan Rivers. Can we talk? She looks at me up and down. And she says, what? And I said, can we talk? Do you have some time to talk to us? And she said, excuse me? And I repeated myself again. I was giving my Joan Rivers fantasy. Can we talk? And she said, you don't talk to me. And then I'm confused. I don't know what to do. And so I immediately go into like people pleaser 101, and I start apologizing. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to bother you. I'm so sorry. And she looks me up and down once again, and she says, "You are sorry." And then she cocks her hand back, and then slaps me right across the face. And I go, ow, you know, it was crowded. So like, I fell over just slightly to the person next to me, not all the way to the ground, but like I was near it. And as soon as I said, ow, she was like, that's right, you little itty bitty bitch. And I cried a little bit, you know, J-Lo, why? And then she looks me into my soul, like through my eyes, past them bitches, into my soul, and says, you know why? And then she kicked me, and then she snatched my keys. Don't know how she knew even where they were, and my wallet. She took my keys and my wallet, gave them to her people, and just said, handle it. She found my address. She broke in, stole my dog. To this day, I don't know where Reggie is, mostly because it didn't happen. But You would imagine, right? You would think so. With all the stories that's been happening, you would. It didn't sound too fucking far off, right? But yeah, people got a lot of stories about J-Lo. I don't know, man. Yeah, she's Jennifer Lopez. I don't know. A part of me doesn't feel like she deserves all the hate that she's getting. She deserves more. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Here's the thing. It's not a crime to be an asshole, but it's also not nice to be one either. So, and that's essentially what I think each story is hinting at or implying when it comes to her. You know, I've met people, I've met celebrities, and not all of them have been as nice as I have had hoped that they would be. A lot of them have been disappointments, but the beautiful thing about it is when you have those experiences, you allow those people to disappoint you and you understand the importance of separating the art from the person and being able to enjoy the art, you know, and loving their work versus loving them as people, because we don't know these people as people. And I don't know J-Lo, so I can't speak to it. But it's sad to see so many people impacted in such significant ways by how they cross paths with her, especially the people in the service industry. And that's really painful to hear. And also the people who have contributed greatly to her music career who feel slighted. That's sad. So yeah, it's sad. Sad, man. It's sad. Anybody who watches 911 on ABC, formerly Fox, girl, they done made Buck buy. They have made Evan Buckley bisexual on 911. I used to pray for times like this. I just think this is so dope. I don't know. I just think it's so dope because the fans have been hinting at this for seasons. People thought that there was this underlying connection or love between the characters Buck and Eddie. And I'm not gonna lie, I didn't not feel it, you know? It's very Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig and Bridesmaids. It's very Tony Childs and Joan Carol Clayton and Girlfriends. It's like, are y'all just best friends or y'all gonna kiss? Y'all gonna kiss? Y'all gonna kiss? Kiss. Kiss. But, you know, they're besties who are like one cocktail away from making out. That's what Buck and Eddie give, at least so say the fans. And for seasons, as a viewer, as a lover of the show, because anything with Angela Bassett in, I'm watching, it was disheartening to see all of the main lead actors, the adults in the show, get, even the children in the show, get such enriching stories that really shape and mold their character. You had Maddie and her DV struggles. You had Chimney and his father and the issues that he has with him, feeling like he wasn't as loved or as accepted as his younger brother. Then you have Hen, who went through so many ups and downs when it comes to her ex and her drug addiction and criminal history, and then, you know, having their son, who she now shares with her new wife, and then the foster care system. You have Athena and all that her family's been through with the kidnapping, Maze, you know, self-harm attempt, Bobby and his history with his family and the way that they tragically passed. You have Eddie and his amazing relationship with his son, who has a disability. And then his son's mother, who ended up passing away after they got back together. And then you have Buck. And it seems like Buck's biggest issue was he had an older brother who passed away that he knew nothing about and never met. Buck's biggest thing wasn't even about Buck. And the through line with that character with Buck seems to be that he just is always constantly wondering. And they haven't really found out how to flesh him out. And the audience has been for years trying to like help you in this direction. And so now with him discovering this extension of his sexuality, I think it's so dope. And I think they did it in such a beautiful, satisfying way as a viewer. Because we all felt this, we felt something brewing throughout the entire episode. And for me as a viewer, I was waiting on him to show that he had feelings for Eddie, maybe. Because I already knew Tommy. And I think Tommy, I don't know, I could be wrong. I should probably look it up instead of just running my mouth. But I think Tommy was one of the firefighters who left after Bobby took over as captain. I think that's his lore. That's his background. I could be wrong. But with Tommy, I had already had a feeling that she was family. So I wasn't surprised by that. I thought at most what was going to happen was Tommy telling Buck that he has feelings for him. Then there was a part of me that hoped that Buck would realize that he has feelings for Eddie. But never did I think that both of those things would kind of be aligned in such a perfect way where Buck does have feelings for Eddie as a friend, but his arc, his story leads him to Tommy through those feelings for Eddie. So through his friendship with Eddie, he found a new romantic interest in Tommy. And I don't know, I just thought that fit so well. I thought that fit perfectly. And it's a great starting point because now Buck can be as interesting as Buck actually is in his full self. I'm not going to lie, part of me was kind of like, yay, it's happening, it's happening. And then it's like, oh no, what now? Where do we go from here? What happens when you finally get what you want? I got scared for a moment, I'm not going to lie. But now he, you know, we go along for the ride. He has to tell Maddie at some point. I mean, he doesn't have to, but I mean, I could imagine that he's going to, and that, and then, you know, he's going to just be bi Buck, the bisexual Buck. That's canon in the 911 universe. And that's the real gift. That's the real gift. What else? Oh, Shanti is just a bundle of muscle now. Have you seen this? Do you know about it? This man is just absurdly swole. It's amazing, honestly. But yeah, he's just a bundle of muscle now. Not that he wasn't before, but like the bundle has greatened. It has increased. It's swollen. It's a lot. He looks like he straps furniture to his back and just does squats for fun. And I support that. He looks great. Sean T has always looked amazing, but the more muscle he puts on, it really does. It's beautiful. It's what he wants to do with his body. He's obviously very fit, very in shape. And I feel like if Ernie Hudson is any indication of how good one can look as they age due to the muscle mass that they've, you know, retained over the years, I say, get it, bitch. Sign me up if I can. Well, I don't know. That's a lot of work. But I feel like the main reason why Ernie Hudson looks the way he does, because Ernie Hudson has been trending as well. Mainly because of how good he looks at, what, 68? That man is almost 70, looking every bit of like 45. So, and I think that is due in large part to the fact that he's retained so much muscle mass over the years. So it's a beautiful thing to build muscle. It's good for your body. It's beautiful to see as well. I'm not mad at it. You know, it's not too hard on the eyes. It's admirable. I don't know if my black ass is going to be building that much muscle. It's a lot of work, but one can dream, one can hope. It's pretty cool. Oh, also Drag Race picked their final three. That's amazing. There's Nymphia Wind, who I love, playing Jane, who is a menace, and Safira Cristal, who is my winner, my pick. Good old Slewfoot. I've said it from the beginning. I have not changed. That is who I'm rooting for. I love Nymphia as well. And playing Jane has really endeared herself to viewers, I think. Through her shady, shady ways, she's found a way to still cut through the ice queen that she presents to be and to really show her humanity. And I think that that's really cool. So all three of them are amazing finalists. And any one of them could take home the crown. But like, Safira. The sheer weight and the volume of the clothing she brought. I feel like you just have to give it to her. She's earned it. 11 years of auditioning. And to me, never disappoints on the runway. She's always stepped out looking rather lovely. So I don't know. And she's always killed in the challenges and has done such a phenomenal job at just communicating her style of drag, her sense of humor, her point of view so eloquently, but in such a relatable, grounded, funny, fun way. God bless. I'm a stan, aren't I? It's okay. It's okay. If I am going to stan somebody, it's going to be Sophia Cristal. All right. That's all I really got for gay news. I don't know what else happened. Should I look on TikTok? The only thing that's really been happening on TikTok is people talking about the eclipse, which was mid. I've heard people rate it. And you know, if you were in the path of totality, I'm sure it was magical. Sure, it was everything it needed to be and more. I only had 34% coverage where I live. And I bought every single pair of glasses that I could just to be safe. Because I thought I was going to see it. They don't do a great job explaining the eclipse and like space and science in general. Or maybe I'm dumb. You know what? Two things can be true at once. Listen, they don't really explain it well. They don't explain it well. I thought it was going to get dark everywhere, which would have been insane. But that would have matched the hype of this momentous occasion and event, you know? Like, they made it seem like it was going to be, like, lights out everywhere all at once. Shout out Michelle Yeoh. But, yeah, it was beautiful to see people have those amazing emotional reactions to such a unifying event. I wish I would have gotten some of that action, too. But I didn't. So, just believe them glasses went right the fuck back to Amazon. And yeah. People are also doing the look-alike filter where you put your face in the view of the camera. And it tells you what celebrity you look like. And as it was scanning my face, it proceeded to also play in it. Because it told me that I look like Lana Del Rey. And beautiful, 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 beautiful gowns. I don't see it. No. But funny enough, it's not the worst one I've heard. As far as celebrity lookalikes. It's not the worst one I've heard. I've gotten Kirk Franklin. I've gotten Bobby Valentino. I've gotten an older Vic Mensa. We're the same age, by the way. I've gotten Kirk Franklin, Bobby Valentino, an older Vic Mensa. We're the same age, by the way. Kyle Massey when I was younger, because I was a little big. I was bigger. I don't know. Whenever someone has said I look like somebody, they've always chosen violence. So, and TikTok is no exception. It loves to violate me. So I'm not sure who I look like. I think it's just me. I think it's just myself. I mean, I was hoping to get like maybe a young Terrence Howard, you know, adjacent, at least. No. The nicest one I've gotten is Omari Hardwick. And I know that's a lie. Man, it's fine. I'm nothing to sneeze at either. But Omari, come on. I love being delusional, but I don't want nobody to throw me into an institution. I really don't. So I'm not going to agree to that. But yeah, I think I just look like myself. I want to see a really good one. I want to see a really good one. TikTok ought to work on that. They told one white man he looked like Michelle Obama, and I have not recovered since. So maybe it's better if they don't. TikTok, actually keep doing what you're doing. It's funny. But otherwise, that's pretty much it. That's all I have to say. I talked for so long, too long, some would say. It's me. I'm some. We'll see if I post this. Bye. I don't know how to end this,